The Five Leadership Questions podcast is brought to you by Ministry Grid, an online video-based training resource for all the leaders and volunteers at your church. To learn more and to get a two-week free trial, visit ministrygrid.com/howitworks. That's ministrygrid.com/howitworks. Now, enjoy the podcast. Hey, and welcome to the Five Leadership Questions podcast. I am your host, Barnabas Piper, back at it again with Todd Adkins.
That was a little rough.
That was a little rough, but yeah. But you had a couple warm-ups before we started.
I did.
And you needed them because you're a germ-infested creature now.
I am a carrier, actually, because my children are carriers.
Yes.
And I should just walk around my house in a SARS mask.
Patient and latex X. Gloves. Yeah. You haven't heard that, listeners, in a while, that dulcet greeting of Todd's, because we have been experiencing a handful of changes here on the Lifeway leadership team.
Yes, we have.
Although I'm not exactly sure it's fair for me to say here. Maybe I should say there at this point, because one of the changes is that
moveon.org.
I have moved on to a different team at Lifeway. Not for lack of enjoyment or satisfaction or appreciation of my team members, because the Lifeway leadership team is still my favorite team at Lifeway. Don't tell the people I work with right now.
We won't. Barnabas got a promotion.
I was offered a promotion.
He's done good stuff. He's grown as a leader on the leadership team.
Because Todd,
we smoke what we sell, folks.
That's right. Todd walks it out. He made me a better leader. So I now oversee the marketing for Broadman and Holman's Academic Publishing, and then Word Search Bible Software, which is our Bible study and sermon preparation, lesson preparation software. So I'm marketing strategy for all that stuff now.
Fear not.
But you know what I'm not?
What?
I'm not done with this podcast.
No way. No how.
That's what I'm not. So I'm going to continue to do this.
Yes.
And I will continue to work with Todd on this.
It's really funny because when I talk to Jim,
Jim is my new boss.
Who is a character in and of himself. We should have him on just to have fun.
Jim is hilarious.
It would be awesome. But I was like, hey, there's one request. Can Barnabas still do it? He was like, how many listeners do you have? Yeah, I think that would be good.
Because I get to come on here and mention Word Search Bible repeatedly.
Word Search Bible.
And then I get to talk about different books we've got coming out, like The Lost Sermons of C.H. Spurgeon.
Spurgeon.
Which really is an amazing book. I didn't know anything about it until about 3 weeks ago. So
I saw one the other day and I was I coveted it.
But
instead I gave it to a visitor. Actually, the person who is coming up through our pipeline that will be taking Barnabas's spot, which is a guy named Chandler Vannoy.
Who you will probably hear on this podcast at some point.
Definitely will hear on this podcast. He is a young, scrappy young man that he was actually one of our interns. So, again, leadership pipeline.
That's right. He interned with us, 2-3 years ago?
Oh, yeah.
I think it was my first year here.
Totally. And we kept him on board because, first of all, he hustled and was just an assassin in getting things done. His strength finder is learner, achiever, competition, and I don't care about the rest.
So Chandler will be taking my position and I'm sure doing some really good stuff with it because he's good at different things than I am. And he'll be part of the podcast regularly. So if over the next few weeks there's just a bit of ebb and flow with the podcast, it's because this transition is still going on and there's a lot of things that are up in the air right now, just logistically. But we will continue to do our best.
We will continue to drop sweet, succulent episodes.
Nice.
As much as possible.
So we'll continue to interview great guests. We'll continue to sit down and do...
I'm not medicated today either.
I know. Well, you're just, this is just high on life.
I'm just high on life.
You're just happy to be in the same room as me.
Just happy. Yes, it's been a while.
It has been. Speaking of great content, we are going to do something a little different today than we've done in a while. It's been several months since we've done this, and it's a listener question podcast. So we have a form. If you go to lifeway.com/leadership, you could hit the podcast tab. There's a place where you can enter questions to us. We prefer if you keep them succinct.
Oh my goodness.
Some of the people who send us questions today shared a life story. We're not counselors. We don't help you with family of origin issues. We're here to try to help sort out some leadership questions. But we did get some great questions.
If you listen to this podcast, you already know that we're not probably the best people
to talk to. That's right. What are you doing coming to us for life advice?
Emotions or
That's right. We, you know, Todd can drop some one-liners and I'll make fun of you. And I don't know, else you're here. So we have five great questions that we culled out of the life stories. We found some good ones in there. We would love if you send us more, because if we can do episodes like this somewhat regularly, that's great. More practical for you, not just us guessing at what you want to hear. So let's just dive into it. Our first question, I will say some of these are rather involved questions. They involve people's stories. They involve people's churches and coworkers.
Yes.
I'm removing all the details
to protect
all innocent parties involved and myself.
And the guilty.
Yes. I don't know which I am, but protection across the board. So I'm going to give a context and then come up with a question out of it. So the first one is he's a pastor who has about 10 plus years of experience in ministry. So pretty decent amount. He's not a newbie to the job.
Nope.
But the church is less than 5 years old, and most of the people he leads alongside are either part-time or volunteer and very new to it. So just less than a couple years of experience. And he says he continually runs into the challenge of not quite being sure how to listen to their ideas and suggestions without squashing them, even when those ideas and suggestions are kind of off target. So they don't seem to reflect
dumb
the vision. He doesn't call
before.
Them dumb. He's very nice.
If I remember right, part of it is he's like, hey, we've tried some of this stuff before. This isn't the first time we've...
Yeah, they're off vision and off strategy. So the question is, how do you listen to ideas from inexperienced leaders that are off vision and off strategy and not squash them and keep energy pointed in the right direction?
Oh,
that's an involved question. And I'm going to let you take this one.
Okay.
Director of leadership.
All right. I think, first of all, it's a posture issue. It's you having to recognize that this is probably more biographical than ideological, meaning that this is part of their story. They have more emotions tied to it. It is probably more soft in their psyche versus you having processed whatever this is that you're saying, hey, we're going through this again and again and again. It's already solidified into ideology for you. So for them, this is just another idea, or this is an emotional thing, or this is part of their story. And, you know, it's something that's come out of them or come to them from somebody. They know the people attached to this, all that. So they're wanting you to make an exception on something, or they're wanting you to start some ministry or whatever it is. You have to remember that this is fresh for them, even though it's not for you. So listening is important.
Yeah.
Even though it may just be ear service, maybe. Ear service, perhaps.
It's listening to the person.
Yes.
Because you value the person. And so if your goal is to coach them towards understanding the vision and strategy, they have to feel valued as a member
of
the team. And so, I mean, that's the value of listening. It's not necessarily the value of the idea. If a person is only as valuable as their ideas, you're probably not leading very well, because you're treating them as a commodity.
You're never going to run out of great ideas. So
Or
dumb ideas. So part of the deal is making sure that you have a clear, emphasize this enough, clear vision and values.
Yeah.
So if this fits our vision and values, that's the first checkpoint. If it doesn't, then we're not even talking about it. I mean, you can listen to it.
Right.
But it should be, if you've done a good job at this, they should not bring anything that is not on point. Number two, hopefully, in addition to having your vision and values down, you've also said, hey, here's our you know, goals for the year, or here's,
right,
you know, the things that we're chasing after.
Top priorities, et cetera.
Top priority. So how does this fit in to what we're doing?
Yeah.
If it doesn't, it's just a great idea that is sideways energy.
And there's a way to engage their ideas to do exactly what you just said without saying, nope, doesn't fit the vision. Because that, you know, he wants to know how to do this without squashing their ideas. You take their idea and you stack it up next to the vision. And so it's a way to reiterate vision and direction and priorities and then compare their idea and say, okay, how does your idea help us get here? And not in sort of a, well, how does it help us? Yeah. But in a trying to find the value in it. And if they get the vision, they're going to say, oh, you're right. That's not it. Or you revise the idea to yes. get to the vision. Because totally. The vision is held up there. So you're both reiterating and centering on this thing that is our direction organizationally, ministerially, and you're either changing their idea to be a good one yeah. or you're helping them make the determination that it's not. You're not saying dumb idea, not helpful. And we could probably go on about this at length. We could probably come up with five questions about that, but we're not going to do
Give
that. We're going to hit our second one. All right. So it's another somewhat involved situation. We have a mega church, very large mega church, fairly conservative, traditional. We have a self-described young maverick leader whose strengths are making things happen and shaking things up. This leader wants to know how to do those things, make things happen, shake things up, while being humble and not stepping on toes. So how do you be a young, maverick, humble leader who shakes things up without stepping on toes?
I thought you said we weren't answering any of that required counseling.
I'm going to go with Jesus stepped on toes.
Yeah,
I'm not sure that that's a mandate for leading change.
Moving forward means stepping on toes. If you are moving forward with anything, there will be conflict because in any organization, church or otherwise, there are always keepers of the status quo ready to quash any young, humble, maverick, hustling, whatever.
Like mover and shaker.
Mover and shaker. So I would say it's impossible. But I would, again, I think so many of these questions come back to posture mm-hmm. and posturing. Like, how are you approaching this? Are you approaching it as, hey, I'm the young maverick mover and shaker.
Yes.
I know more than you, and you guys are old. Get out of my way.
Yeah.
Or are you approaching it differently?
Well, it is a problem if you see your role in life as to shake things up, because that's not a direction. That doesn't have a purpose. All that is being contrarian and kind of a pain in the butt. And I know this from personal experience.
I was going to say, Bartimus,
I speak biographically when I say that's not a useful way to get things done. So this ties to our first question about vision and purpose, because if your moving and shaking is not for a very specific purpose for the good of the church and generally tied in with the direction the church is going, you are just a thorn in the side.
Yeah.
And you're probably not very humble. So can you be a humble maverick leader? Yeah. Sure. But if maverick is your goal, then you're not going to be humble.
No.
So it has to be something where you come in and you may recognize that your gift is to see things from a different angle, different perspective, what other people don't see, to see how to make some changes to improve things. But then change isn't the goal. Improvement is the goal. Progress is the goal. Vision, mission is the goal. And so every change can be presented as a positive, not as a we're just shaking things up.
Yeah.
And I think if you're young, that's harder because you just get frustrated with the inertia of an organization. And so you just change things. Just go ahead and do it. And I mean, I feel that often when I see a change that needs to be made, I just want to make it. And I get frustrated with the slow pace and different things. And that's a situation where perspective goes a long way, and saying, you know, incremental change or learning to prioritize changes and say, that's an essential change that I'm going to really invest in. A lot of these are preferential changes and can be, they might follow in the wake or they might not. And so I guess I would just, again, circle back around to focus on humble, don't focus on maverick.
Yeah, focus on making sure people know that you're humble and hungry first. And so it really is going through and, dude, even if you have to go through a laborious process that has seven extra steps that you don't need to do,
mm-hmm.
go through that. Once or twice, crush what it is in front of you.
Yeah.
And then you actually earn the right to go back and say, hey, I really appreciate, you know, again, it's all about posture. It's coming back with an appreciative attitude of understanding that, hey, I'm standing on the shoulders of people that have gone before me, you know, all mm-hmm. those things. And then saying, but this is the direction I see the church going. Am I right? Yep. That's the direction. Okay. Well, here's, you know, here's how I think we can get there quicker.
Yeah.
Or, you know, how, what this thing that I want to do or this thing that I want to change, how we do it gets there more readily.
Yeah. And I guess I would just say in my last thought on this, it's very hard to be believed in saying we should go in a different direction if you haven't sort of bought into or invested in the direction the church was already going. Yeah. So if the first thing you do is say, let's change, you don't have any credibility. But if you've invested in where the church is and is going, then when you say we should change, there's a level of credibility and trust that's earned.
In your pocket to spend.
Very nice. All right. Next question. This is a shorter one, not as involved. Thank you for the listener who submitted a single sentence question.
Show you right.
In a desire to reach millennials, have churches forgotten how to reach other generations?
Oh.
I'm going to go with yes and no.
Yes and no. Yeah.
Because the opposite is equally as true. And
yeah,
it is
there's plenty
in
of
a desire to serve baby boomers or the builder generation. They don't reach millennials. Yeah. I mean, so churches tend to be effective at reaching a certain demographic generationally or any other way.
As a young Xer, I guess I'm a young Xer.
A Yexer.
Sometimes I look at both boomers and millennials and I'm like, well, y'all got a lot more in common than I got in common with either of you.
Well, that's like the classic Gen X trait. You think you're special. You're like, I'm disaffected.
I'm so disaffected.
I'm going to go listen to Nirvana and Pearl Jam and be depressed.
What's the trail? Ozark Trail? No, what was the big, the video game?
Oregon Trail?
Oregon Trail, yes.
Yes.
Have you seen the Oregon Trail generation?
I'm part of the Oregon Trail generation.
It says if you're a young Xer or older millennial, that we're like a separate.
That's like a formative thing of your childhood and youth. Yep.
And I think they nailed it. Google that if you haven't seen it.
The Oregon Trail generation. Yep.
Because it like really bridges millennial and Xer really well.
And
okay. So what was the question?
In a desire to reach millennials, have churches forgotten other generations? And the answer is some of them. But I think other churches have never reached millennials effectively. And then the churches that, I mean, that's a very negative way to state it. What are churches doing well? I think churches that are effectively reaching generations across the board are, I think they're marked by kind of humble genuineness.
They're marked by authenticity and discipleship.
I was trying really hard not to say authenticity because I feel like it's buzzy.
It is a buzzword, but it's, I mean, I'm just trying to be authentic. And
just tell your story, live your journey.
Tell my story, live my journey.
But yeah,
I want to be a tour guide, not a travel agent.
It's when people walk in, do they believe what is being said and sung and preached? Do they believe that the people there care about one another? I mean, that is a multi-generational trait. Love covers a multitude of sins and generations, I think. It's just sort of, it's marked by that.
It's really, does this person care about me? If I know this person cares about me, it makes up for a lot of whether or not I click with this person or not. If I know that you care about me, when I look at the people who, you know, made me or whatever, those relationships weren't always easy at first. It was something that we kind of learned as we went. But one characteristic that sticks out in all those is the person actually cared about me and they cared about my progression, even though it may not have been something that seemed like a natural fit. It was still that. So I would say, regardless of generation, it's really it all comes back to discipleship and relational development.
This is a question about style over substance. Because if people are intentionally, quote unquote, trying to reach millennials,
it's a style.
That is, they have narrowed their style to think that this is what millennials want. Usually they're wrong, by the way, because millennials want something they can trust in and believe, not something that plays a guitar a certain way and has the certain, certain kind of aesthetic. Now, those are not bad things, but do not put style over substance. The substance of love, genuineness, words are hard, authenticity, for lack of a better word.
Just math.
those are things that are multi-generational, that speak to millennials, and that sort of wipe away the point of this question in terms of like it should not be an issue.
It shouldn't be an issue if you're focusing on your substance.
All right. Now we've got another very involved question. The short version is, how do you know if you're the problem with your team? The long version is there is another church that is stuck. It's not moving. There are changes that need to be made. It has a ton of programs, but they're not really going anywhere. This particular leader keeps trying to speak into those issues. Some of the fellow leaders acknowledge that there's a problem. The senior leadership does not. This is not the senior leader. It's sort of an associate leader. And he or she wants to know, when is pushing on that problem, when does it stop being helpful and become just an additional problem? So when is that basically useless? And this is a multi-layered question, because some of that is, how much longer can this person stand it? And the other is, when are they just going to become an annoyance to the organization?
Yeah. Well, I'd say in part, you need to make sure that this is a wholly discontent issue and not a personal discontent or a pet peeve issue. It's one thing if there's a wholly discontent that it's like people use that, abuse that, I should say, where it's like, God is telling me that we need to do one-on-one discipleship, or whatever it is that is your particular drum that you want to beat. That is different than what we're talking about here. What we're talking about here sounds like not just one issue, but multiple issues of change and progression moving forward. Is that correct? Is that an accurate?
I think that's fair. I don't know. This is a weird one, because you're comparing a person's heart to an organizational dysfunction. We're trusting that the leader who sent in the question has their finger on the pulse of what actually needs to change. It's very hard to give an answer to somebody who is, they're basically asking, when should I give up and when should I move on? And I don't know. I mean, and that's not a helpful answer, but you have to know, like, when is your heart dry up? When do you stop really believing in this organization? Because they speak very hopefully about the church. They say our church can be so much better than what we are. That's a hopeful statement.
I think you be the change you want to
be the change you want to see in the world.
I do think that you
sorry.
Gonna make a change. Sorry. I
was inspired by the Grammys.
Do need to whatever is in your sphere of control and influence and whatever, that's where you start. And if you can have an effect there, hopefully it will be seen elsewhere. There are a lot of people that want to fix the whole organization. And they have control and ability to fix it within their own sphere and let it grow from there. Dealing with campuses in the past, I can remember having more than one conversation that went something like this: you are innovative where you should be static, and static where you should be innovative.
One liner.
And that was exactly the case. They wanted to innovate something that did not need to be innovated.
Right.
From not just one opinion, but multiple opinions. It wasn't a massive issue. And they wanted to be static on some stuff that's like, hey, this is where you can really customize this for your campus, or this is something that you can grow in this. You want, you know, to speak every Sunday. You don't want to take a video feed. Well, okay, you have a full facility that's available 24/7. Why don't you do that on Wednesday night or Thursday night or, you know, Sunday night? Go for it, dude.
Yeah, and not buck the thing that is kind of part of what being a campus at this church means, for example.
Once you do that, once you exhibit this, maybe then it will have an effect on the whole.
I think one other thought tied into what you just said. There's a book called Culture Making by Andy Crouch, and he talks about how there's this people want to be world changers. And he's talking about just a broader context outside of something like this. But people want to be world changers. And he's like, nobody changes the world. Like, that's a nonsense phrase. That's not a thing that like the average person does. And so it's a crushing weight and it kind of a something we can't do. If you want to scale it down, most people are not in a position to change a whole organization.
No.
So what he talks about in there is changing your culture, the culture of your own personal life, the culture of your family relationships, the culture of, you know, kind of starting with very tiny concentric circles and working your way out. So take that in a leadership sphere. What is the ministry you oversee? Who are the handful of staff you work most closely with? That is really, that was tough. And what influence are you having on that culture and that direction, not at odds with the church, but sort of as an example for the church? So you're not trying to start a church within a church. You're not trying to, you know, start a coup. But what you're trying to do is create something so that when people see that, they go, that's appealing. That's the thing that we need more of. And so then you may gain more influence. And if not, you've had significant influence on the people you lead. And I think that may not be satisfactory to everybody. Some people may need to see the whole organization change, or they may be just wrung out by the direction it's going. But that is a starting place, and also a place that, you know, faithfulness in small things can lead to faithfulness in big things.
I remember, it's a Christine King quote of most people want to change the world, but they're not willing to change themselves. And you got to be willing to change your ministry and what you can control before you try to change your whole church.
All right. This last one, again, thank you to the listener who sent in a single sentence question that I can read verbatim. How do you foster a mentality of ownership rather than renting with people in your ministry or organization? And
I'm rent to own.
Well, I think this is an interesting question, especially with the work patterns that are going on.
Totally.
Because the average tenure of people in the workplace at a particular organization, I think, is declining pretty rapidly. Yes. I think, you know, we brought up millennials earlier. Millennials don't stay at jobs very long. Like a 3-year tenure is a lengthy amount of time for a millennial at a single organization, or, you know, and especially at a single position. Now, that's not a bad thing, because that can be growth. But ownership mixed with transience that's tricky, because the mindset is kind of using this place to get to somewhere else. I think that is one of the challenges that this question reflects.
Yeah. And it's the, you know, just the thought of lack of commitment to an organization, to an ideology, you know, to a position in a church, especially a volunteer position. So one of the things I would say is part of the issue is you are stuck in a transactional environment, and you want to move your transactional environment to a transformational environment. And that's a development issue. That's a people development issue. So if you're just creating spots for warm bodies, no wonder you get rental mentality.
Yeah.
Because all you're doing is you're practicing leadership placement. You're just saying, hey, you know, here's a spot, I need it filled, and you're dumping on people versus actually developing the person and actually giving them something to grow into and to call them into at a deeper level. You need to call people into ownership. They're naturally, especially in a church environment, they're naturally going to approach it with a rental mentality unless you set the tone to be otherwise.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit like, I mean, you see this in, I mean, there have been, you know, sociological studies on this with things like public housing and the like. And when people do not feel a sense of ownership for their property or for their space, it's easy to let those things kind of fall apart and just kind of be like, oh, man, I just live here. Somebody else is responsible to take care of it. And so it's, and that's, I mean, that's even a little bit lower than rental. But when they're given a sense of ownership and responsibility and dignity and pride in that, all of a sudden it's cleaner, it's better kept and things like that. And this, it's the mindset that applies to, if you have a volunteer in your church nursery, for example, and all they are there for is to fill an hour on Sunday, what the heck do they care about the kids in that room or about presenting the gospel to 3-year-olds or whatever? I mean, now you hope that they have passion, but you are not giving them a reason to have passion. You are asking them to fill a spot.
One of the things I love about my current church is that they actually like give you a framework for baby care of like, this is how you're praying. You may just be rocking babies, but this is the framework of prayer that you're actually walking through for this child while you're rocking the child.
Yeah.
And in some ways, I mean, I never even heard of that before.
Yeah.
That's one of the things that you know, just talked about. That's one way that you can make that something that's a little bit deeper.
Yeah.
And meaning,
I think at a higher professional level. So, I mean, that's with volunteers. I mean, that's a very stark example. At the higher professional level, I think it is, you do need to recognize that the employee is getting something out of this, you know, so they like, they might be there for a personal agenda, but usually it's a both and, you know, it's a, I believe in what we do, but I'm also trying to position myself to grow and things like that. So if you value the things that they value, so I too want to see you grow. I want to help you develop. I want to, you know, see you advance. Then all of a sudden they're going to grab hold of those opportunities and own them because they see that it's going to take them somewhere.
Yeah.
You rent when you think something is temporary and not a place you want to, like, this, there's nothing to build on here.
Yeah.
You own when you want to either put down roots or build on it, improve on it. And so give them the hope and the opportunity of those things, or it's going to be a, well, I kept it clean for a while and now I'm out.
You know, one of my favorite books is actually one from Big Boss Daddy Rayner that nobody, well, not nobody, you would have to be older to have read. It's one on high expectation churches. And so it was just a, you know, research study from probably 2 decades ago. But it was basically, hey, when you set high expectations before people, they respond and there's greater growth. And that growth is exhibited by service, giving, you know, all the things that you want to see. And someone's spiritual maturity.
Pretty sure that's a good place to land this one. I hope those were helpful answers. I hope we gave any sort of insight to these questions. I mean, I hope for listeners, it's helpful to hear other leadership questions and experiences, because maybe there's a little bit of overlap with your life, or hearing what other people are going through in their churches. Maybe there's a sense of, oh, me too. Or just a sense of, wow, we're doing really well because none of those issues have anything to do with me. But either way, hope it's beneficial to listeners. We love getting questions. So again, go to lifeway.com/leadership. Hit the podcast tab at the top, and then you can listen to old episodes there, as well as submit questions and topic ideas. So this is another place where you can say, hey, we'd love to hear an episode on this. That's a place to do that. Lifeway.com/leadership. Hit the podcast tab. That's also the site where you can find the leadership blog. You can find some free downloads. You can find information about events like the regional coaching events that are going on throughout the spring. If you go to myleadershippipeline.com/regionals, you can see the ones that are coming up in the coming months, different places around the country. So if the leadership
no matter when you listen to this, there's probably going to be something in the queue.
Yeah, so we have them running through late spring into June even, so yeah. Plenty of time. This is going to air pretty shortly after we record it, so there's plenty of time to sign up for those scattered around the country. And then we have our fall leadership conference here in Nashville, the Pipeline Conference, with speakers such as Bob Russell and John Piper, who I've heard he's decent. Leonce Crump, H.B. Charles, and then a variety of speakers who are going to give some very practical application to things as well. So, again, myleadershippipeline.com. Go there. You can see the regionals. You can see the fall conference. All of these are things that the leadership team here at Lifeway offers to help organizations, specifically churches, develop leaders, develop a leadership pipeline. And that's something we care deeply about. So check out those websites again, lifeway.com/leadership and myleadershippipeline.com. Check those out. Thanks so much for listening. Tune in next time.
Thank you for listening to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast. Remember, you can get a free 2-week trial of Ministry Grid at ministrygrid.com/howitworks. Try it out and see how it can help you develop leaders at your church.